This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4. Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, create it, turn it, point it to me, press it, snap it, work it, cook it, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quickly write it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, gem and lock it.
Good afternoon, this is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, the show where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. My name is...
Have you forgotten?
He doesn't know who he is.
I'm sorry, I just looked across at you, Michael, and you're putting... Your headphones are weird.
Don't label my headphones.
It's like a beard headphone. That's just odd.
He's using the headphones around the chin, like a chin strap.
I've got to because my glasses get in the way of the headphones. It's very annoying.
Behave yourself, children.
I'll turn this car out. Hi, Dad.
All right.
I'll give you 5 cents if you're quiet.
Okay. 5 cents. Wow. It's amazing. Thanks, of course, to Katie and Macca and to all the awesome guests this morning of Saturday Mag. Saturday Mag,
if you're one of the cool kids.
Again this week. And, of course, Penny for the Joy News just now. Thank you very much, Penny. With you in the studio, the voices you have heard so far, myself, Mark. We also have Johnny.
Hey, hey. Hey.
Hey. And Raina.
Hey, hey, hey.
What's funny?
And Michael. Your pilot for this afternoon is Michael.
As long as I don't have to land, we should be fine.
But you should put your tray table up.
Yes, and your exits are diagonally opposite.
Now, in the today's show, this today's lineup, of course, we've got a bit of green tech news this week with the CSIRO developing a supercritical solar power plant. A supercritical power plant.
What does that actually mean?
We'll find out in a few minutes. It's basically heating stuff up enough to make it...
Spoilers.
Critical.
They can wait for it.
That's the technical explanation.
We'll be putting on our tinfoil hats, as always, with T-Mobile over in the US being more transparent about government surveillance requests. There's a massive wad of gaming news this week with the Electronics Entertainment Expo, or E3, as for those of us who are in the know, giving lots of sweet, sweet gaming previews out to us.
It's huge.
I'm so excited.
So my two friends either side of me here are going to be salivating at those news items, friends.
Yes.
And a whole bunch of other tech news, of course. If you'd like to tweet us or text us or contact us at all, you can do so by tweeting us at TechnoGaze, TechnoGaze. You can text us.
0427JOY949. Mm-hmm. I almost gave up my actual phone number. I was like, wait a minute.
Feel free to text Johnny.
Text me now, fellas.
And you can also call us on the front desk this fine hour, 1300JOY949. No matter where you are in Australia, you can call that number.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Give us a call. You can be, if you're online and you're listening to us via the web stream, feel free to call us.
Send an email.
Yes. Oh, yes. I was
waiting for it.
That's right. On air at joy.org.au.
Straight into the studio.
Yes. Shall we get on to the news this week and a bit of spacey type stuff to start off with?
Yeah. This is super cool.
NASA, are they called the NASA? No, they're not.
As opposed NASA. To all the other NASAs kicking around.
They've successfully used laser lasers transfer video from the space station, the International Space Station, back to Earth.
Yep.
Tell us more.
This wouldn't be the laser from the LG phone.
Lasers.
Frickin' lasers.
Which may cause you to spontaneously combust.
So using a frickin' laser pointed from the International Space Station, they sent a 22 megabyte video in 3.5 seconds.
That's pretty fast.
Wow.
That is fairly good, I think.
I wish I had that speed at home.
I was going to say, where's our MBN on that?
I don't have that speed on planet Earth with my phone. Now, using regular sort of radio transmissions, which is what you'd normally use to contact somebody in space, it would take 10 minutes to send that video. And that's, you know, obviously that represents a massive improvement. And not only that, but because if it's easy to collect that much data in a hurry, then it means that they can do quite a lot more experimentation in, you know, than maybe they'd be used to doing at the moment.
Indeed, yeah.
I guess you've kind of got those constraints of how much
data can be transferred back and forth.
Yeah, how much raw data you can send home.
And so I guess in these days of big data, the more data you collect, you've got to get it off the space station somehow. And it's not really that convenient to go up there with a USB stick to copy it on. And I'll be back in a day or so.
Well, can't they just drop it out of the window or something?
With a parachute?
How many hard drives could you take with you? Like, could that payload, if it was big enough, actually be a technically bigger throughput? I don't know.
Maybe they should just send some laden swallows or something. What is it? The pigeons?
African or European?
I don't know if pigeon over FTP will work. In space.
Pigeon over FTP. FTP over pigeon. TCPI pigeon.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, this is not the easiest thing in the world to do. So,
I was going to say, there's a big challenge, right? So it's like keeping the laser in like pointed right at what you need to point it at, right?
That's right. And I mean, if you remember what it was like to have a CD player in your car before it had those little buffers in it, or if you had a Walkman that didn't have a buffer.
Yes.
The and bumps, stuff, and it would
jumps.
Bump. That's in a car, right? Now imagine you're in actual space, and so any tiny movement represents, you know, loads of actual distance on Earth. So being able to keep that.
Just imagine, like, you're downloading a video game in space, and then, like, an asteroid flies in front of the laser beam, and then you're screwed. You've got to re-download the whole thing.
Or you shoot it with your laser beam and have a real game of asteroids.
Does it? That's not the kind of laser beam it is. I don't think
it
so.
It should have those defense mechanisms built in,
that's
though,
right? That's right.
Like, any asteroid gets in the way, just obliterate it.
Now, I think the project manager likened this as hitting a human hair with a laser pointer from 20 feet away while walking.
Yeah.
Which is probably a little bit hard to do.
Sounds easy.
Yeah.
Isn't that from when they're shooting the laser beam up into space to the actual space station, it's easy for them to receive, but they can't send it back because the Earth keeps tilting or moving or something?
It depends if they're in geosynchronous orbit, which
I think they are.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
But even so, like there must be slight enough variations for a laser pointer to move.
Think of the distance and trying to aim something at a particular spot. Really hard.
Yeah. And men can't even aim it in the ball at night, so you know.
I was just thinking there too. Maybe there's a little fly painted on the top of the NASA headquarters.
You know what, we need women to aim the laser beams.
Okay, we should move on.
Shouldn't we just? Now, this one's cool. Floating micro countries.
Goodness.
So we're talking about. What are we talking about here? Getting
on a boat.
Yeah.
Going out to a piece of sea that isn't owned by any country, that is international waters. Floating your boat and then like making a permanent colony out in the sea that is outside the boundaries of any government and having your own little baby micronation.
So it's like almost an experimentation type thing of trying out different rules or something and seeing how that
sounds
work.
Awfully like it, but if you look at the sort of people that are behind it, they're really sort of, you know, those slightly nutty libertarian types.
I think it's awesome because they said that they're going to build it or give it a shot by 2020. And what they're going to do is they're going to take modular square or pentagon platforms, and they say that they can make cities with about 225 people in it. So what they're going to do is they're going to, like, set up new politically independent eco-cities and then see what it's like for modern, you know, modern world people to create their own government without having all the actual government crap to deal with. Like, you know, all the red tape and stuff, so they can be like, all right, well, we've decided that we're going to ignore all the other crap that our actual governments make us go through, and we're going to be like, okay, every man gets a goat.
Now, I've played this game. It's called Bioshock.
Yeah, we'll see
isn't
how
it,
that goes.
Isn't it like Bioshock? Yes. If you have played Bioshock, listener, then you'll know. And if you haven't played Bioshock, then I'll tell you. It is about a dude that says, if this, I'm going to go build my own city underground, under the sea. Under the sea, down where it's wetter. Baby, darling, it's better down where it's wetter, under the sea, which I can't believe they didn't use for the soundtrack.
I'm surprised it's not a Tim Finn song.
Oh, jeez. But it all goes terribly, terribly wrong in the game, right?
Yeah.
For lots of reasons that probably won't really apply to real life, but yeah.
Well, you know, that's I think if they're happy to do it, if they're, you know, consenting adults and all the rest of it, hey, why not?
I want to do it.
In the book Lord of the Flies, didn't they form their own government?
I wouldn't call it a government. Maybe, kind of.
Just a bunch of kids with sticks and stones. And
a conch that no one cared about.
This is Technogaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're covering some of the latest in technology, gadgets and consumer electronics, and we'll do more of that in a few moments.
Technogaze. Joy.
Technogaze here on Joy 94.9, and we're a week out from the massive festivities that were Radiothon.
Yes.
But did you know that as a listener, you can still sign up to be a member?
Yes.
For the Radiothon period? In fact, the Radiothon actually finishes at 5 p.m. on June the 30th.
That is pretty spectacular, because if you missed out on being able to join up during the Radiothon week, it means that now you've got until the end of the month to sign up and be eligible for some of those sweet prizes.
Sweet, sweet. Yeah, there's like $36,000 worth of prizes to be won.
So there's a smart car, there's a cruise with Olivia Cruises.
And if
gentleman's makeover for the for suits and ties.
Or, I want that so bad.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Very dapper.
Yeah.
And, of course, if you do sign up during the show, we're going to take credit for it. So
yes. That's right.
So do sign up right now. Give us a call, 1-300-JOY-949. Heath is on the front desk right now, and he's looking a bit...
Looks like he could stand to accept a few donations.
Something to do, so let's give him something to do.
That's right. And, of course, it's so close to the end of the financial year, which is a fantastic time to make a donation to any worthy cause, but we are certainly that kind of worthy cause, I think.
Yes.
Because donations over $2 are, in fact, tax deductible.
They are indeed.
Love that.
Now, technology.
Yes.
We've got a couple of... Oh, actually, yes, this popped up this morning, didn't it, Michael? The the death of a very well-known man...
Nokia.
Nokia. Okay, this is the phone. I think everybody I know and their dog who has ever owned a mobile phone, at least one of those mobile phones, is a Nokia.
But the thing is, Nokia is such a well-known brand in Australia, but it's not so well-known in the States. It's very focused in the Asian area and obviously in Europe, but in the States they really don't know a lot about Nokia, and I think this is one of the reasons why Microsoft is killing the brand off.
Could be.
Now, it was part of the deal when they bought Nokia. They said they would stop using the Nokia name for phones, and they're going to be branding all of their new phones under the Microsoft brand.
Their smartphones are going to be not so Nokia, but good old feature phones, the things that, you know... Remember back when our batteries used to last for a whole week?
Yes.
I prefer to call them dumb phones, not feature phones. Feature phones. What does that mean?
It's they've like, got yeah, features.
The feature
like you
of
can...
making a call and that's it.
And playing Snake.
Ah, yes.
Come on.
I was going to do this sort of thing about, you know, how you know when you encourage kids, you say, you know, that's nice when they don't really have that much talent. And my usual name for that is Little Johnny, but perhaps a little bit too personal today to say Little Johnny, encouraging him.
Go ahead.
Feature phones. Yes. So, they're going to keep they're going to be able to use the name for feature phones for the next 10 years.
Right.
But I suspect that the volume of sales of feature phones are going to drop down to zero pretty quickly.
It's an interesting branding exercise, isn't it? Because Nokia is still a well-known brand, even today. You know, a lot of us had a Nokia phone at one point or another in our lives because they were so prevalent.
Yeah.
But what are they trying to do? They're trying to migrate the customers of their smartphone line to the Microsoft brand, but at the same time keep Nokia as its own a name in its own right.
I guess a name for the product that it was really famous for, which were the feature phones.
Mm.
But there's the other thing, and Nokia also have do telecommunications, do networking.
Right.
And I don't believe that Microsoft bought that, so I assume that part of the business is going to remain Nokia. And so as part of the deal, they wanted to keep the Nokia brand for the datacom side.
Mm. It's almost like they want to create like this brand of rock solid, able to do the networking and the really... non-failing phones. It's like, your reliability.
Yeah,
perhaps.
Yeah,
is what they're looking for.
Windows phones don't fail, do they?
Oh, hey, that's not the suggestion I meant to make. But hey, interesting that it came
all,
out subconsciously.
All devices seem to fail.
Yes. Now we've had an email from
a listener, David.
David. Hello, David. He's explained that his mum's dial-up internet is going...
causing her some trouble.
Giving her the duties.
Yes, the duties. We can't use that word on live radio. Yep.
Thinking of upgrading the technology. Laptop over tablet, Windows over Apple.
Sounds like a very open question there.
It really is, isn't it?
I would say... tablets sort of get you away, let you get away with most things these days. Like, you can do everything that most people want to do, right?
Yeah. Whenever someone asks me this, because it's always like, you know about gadgets, right? And I'm like, yeah. And they go, what should I do with my mum? And I'm like, I don't know your mum.
Yeah.
Right. So if your mum is totally into writing her family history or whatever, then maybe a proper computer is the right thing.
You need the software. Right?
If your mum is more the type to play Candy Crush and update Facebook, maybe a tablet is okay.
And and if she also is busy searching the internet a lot and consuming content rather than creating content.
Exactly.
Then a tablet is probably a far easier thing. It's a lot more portable. It's a lot easier to lug around the house.
Plus, if she's a reader, she can use it as her
e-book.
Yeah, e-book.
Mm, yep.
Mm-hmm.
E-book, get a stand for it, so makes easier when you're cooking. For
my mum's my mum's got one of those stands for the kitchen, so she can look at the recipes, which she never follows anyway. But
it's gonna make your effort though.
One of the other benefits to a tablet would be to have the internet connection all based in the tablet itself. So if you've got the ones with a SIM card inside it. Assuming that the reception in that area is good,
yes,
she could probably get away, or possibly get away with just having the data allowance that is included in a typical tablet.
4G is ridiculously fast these days if you're in a good area for it, and a lot of the deals are getting way cheaper. And if you want to sign up for a contract, even you don't even have to pay anything up front.
Mm.
So depending on how you want to rock that, it's faster than dial up, that's for sure.
Yes, anything's faster than
and, of course, it means that you can take it places. So if mum comes to visit or, goes on holiday or does whatever like that, then, really depends.
And location is a big factor there, right? So 4G isn't prevalent in the sort of the outer suburbs, I think it falls back
to 3G.
It depends on which telco you're with and all that. So there's a lot of varying factors there.
And what router you have if you have home Wi-Fi and you're going off the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that's right. If you have home Wi-Fi as well, then maybe it doesn't matter so much about the coverage, but you never know. As far as the Windows over Apple, it's probably not something that we would necessarily go too far into, this being a non-commercial station. But again, my advice is always... try it out. You can say that one thing's good for one thing's good for another, rah, rah, rah. I know a lot of people that really dig either or. I personally have a couple of computers and I've got one of one and one of the other. So
It's often good to just get in front of have your mother, get in front of it. If she finds it really hard to use, just in a shop or something, then that is a good indication.
And the good thing is these devices are so popular, you probably know somebody that has got a flavour of each and you can sort of, go visit them and have a bit of a tinker for an hour or so and make up your mind.
Without a salesperson around, because, they kind of want to tell you all the stuff, but they don't really necessarily leave you alone with it enough time.
Indeed.
I think.
Indeed. Now, what else have we got on the cards today?
Speaking of routers.
Yes.
iOS 8.
Ooh, yes. Yeah.
Ah, yes. They're trying to...
I was trying to segue you earlier.
Good work. We need a segue sign. We need it, flashing. Ready for segue now. So iOS 8, of course, was announced in last week's or the week before last WWDC.
Yep.
Dub. And... one of the things that has been included in that is the ability for it to actually keep your MAC address quiet.
Yeah, that's right.
So your MAC address is something that's unique to your device. It's a very, like, it's completely unique in the sense of...
It's supposed to be.
Certain, well, there are certain manufacturers that sort of flout the rules, but every manufacturer has its own sort of range of these addresses, and every single device made by that manufacturer is then assigned its own address. Mm-hmm. The idea being that it's used for... routing information to that device in the networking way. So when you actually connect that device to a network.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a serial number for your computer.
Yeah.
But more of a networky sort of thing.
Johnny has something to say. Yeah, he's doing a little squirmy dance. I want to continue.
So basically, well, the update for iOS 8, what it's done is, in the past, when you go around with your device and you're looking for a wireless connection, what it does is it actually sends your MAC address to the router as well. So that could potentially create security risks by taking down your data.
Because even if you don't actually connect to the network, there's still a record that you were checking it out.
And this puts the kibosh on my app.
Your app.
That I was going to build. Because, you know, you can imagine that somebody's walking in a shopping centre, and as they go past the shop, if they've gone past the second or third time, Mr. Shop Attendant, go out and maybe drag them in because they've shown some interest.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's all the privacy concern. And in fact, I think over in London there was talk about rubbish bins being installed that had little devices that would
MAC address trackers.
Pick up on MAC addresses.
How creepy!
Think about MAC addresses as well, as they're not just Wi-Fi, but they're also used in Bluetooth. So it's a very good idea to turn your Bluetooth and your Wi-Fi off when you're roaming around the place, just in the sense of keeping yourself private.
Sort of wearer.
Yeah.
iOS 8 is going to instead send out a fakie. A random fakie every time, and only if you actually decide to connect for reals.
It will send the real one.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is a good idea.
I like it.
I wonder if that is in the spirit of the networking rules.
Well,
I don't know.
You haven't established a connection at that point in time.
Yeah.
You're basically out searching for Wi-Fi access points.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, are you there? And by the way, here happens to be my MAC address.
Right.
And it will respond, say, yeah, I'm here and this is my SSID and everything else.
Interesting. Because the MAC address is actually needed in order for the communication to occur, right? So it can be just any random one.
Yeah. And as long as it doesn't clash with anything. So it's unlikely to. I think this is a good feature in iOS, and I assume that other manufacturers will follow suit.
Mm-hmm. Now, this one that picked my attention was Google Now telling you when to get off public transport.
When you're unruly, when you've got your feet on the chair.
And they'll send you a fine as well. Have you ever been on the train after a long day at work, listening to your favourite tunes and so exhausted that you've ended up falling asleep and consequently missing your stop?
That would imply that I could get a seat on my train.
Depends on what time of night you're on.
I jump on after my train has been all the way through the city loop, so it's picked up everyone and their dog in the city, and then it gets to North Melbourne and it's like, hey, you want to get on? Nope.
Yeah, it's like squish in, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Google have answered this problem, though, for those of us who do fall asleep. Combining their public transport information with the alarm function of an Android phone to provide what is hopefully as reliable as possible to waking you up.
So bad luck if your GPS is out by 300 or 400 metres because you might get off the wrong stop.
Or if you are in fact getting out in the city loop, which does not yet have internet, but apparently it's going to. Yep.
This is the challenge, and I think the challenge that Google have actually overcome with this is it's not based on your location as such. It's actually based on the estimated travel time. It relies...
Oh, my God, this is never going to work in Melbourne.
There is a problem with this in Melbourne, of course, because...
Not only Melbourne.
Google don't actually have any information about our public transport system because our public transport authority isn't providing the data in a way that Google can easily pass. But in other countries, in other cities... where it is readily available and you know roughly where the train is.
Well, it Sydney can actually, apparently can do that.
Yes.
I think Sydney has all that data. So
I think you might be right, actually.
Don't have to go far.
So I assume it would need the real-time tracking data of the public transport that you're taking.
That's the thing. You'd think that would make it a bit
Because you wouldn't
better.
Want to go by schedule because schedules
Certainly
aren't
not
exactly...
Certainly not in Sydney. Yeah, exactly.
But hang on. Even a schedule isn't so bad because it's you're usually later than the schedule anyway. So if it wakes you up before... You know, and there's still another 10 minutes to go before you actually have to get up.
Okay, I'd be pretty resentful.
I don't know what you're like, but when my diary pops up with a reminder that says, "Oh, Michael, go do this," I go do it. I don't question it. Does it do this? Oh, yeah. Fine.
Michael, get out of the train now.
Yes. Oh, doors won't open. Don't know why.
You'd think that'd be more useful, though, if it could tell you, like, you know, get off the train because you're about to arrive at Southern Cross and there's 50,000 footy fans about to jump on.
Ah.
Or, like, that's what I want. Come on.
Because they're actually building it into Google now, which is actually displays cards and that contain contextual information. So there is a potential for it to really, you know, get live, real-time data and potentially, you know, base it not just on your preference to get off at a certain train stop, but actually other bits of information as well.
And, of course, Google will know that you're on the train.
Mm. And, you know, perhaps that that advertising that... that, you know, hey, there's a really cool pie shop next to this train station.
The biometric stuff that you're carrying will say, you seem a bit sleepy. Go have a refreshing whatever at this place.
Yes. We are, it is 12:30 here on Joy 94.9. We're trundling along. How time flies. But we'll be back with more Tech Talk in a few moments. Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. It's 29 minutes to 1, and we're talking tech. We're talking tinfoil hats.
Good old tinfoil.
Scrunch, scrunch, scrunch.
That's right.
Now, T-Mobile over in... their parent company, Deutsche Telekom. Now, T-Mobile is one of the big telcos of the US.
Yes.
And are now talking about reporting the number of government surveillance requests out to the public.
Yes, which is apparently something that they do in Germany, or their parent company does in Germany. And now they'll be doing that to the United States as well, or for the United States, which is good. You know, it's, I mean...
for transparency.
I thought it was T for telecom, but I'm sure it still works. The because it's the thing, right? The law says, oh, well, you've kind of got to report on your customers if we tell you, right? And they have to comply. But at least by actually reporting about it, people will have some sort of understanding that, yes, it happens. Mm. What does it mean? Mm. Maybe even why should I care, which is a pretty progressive attitude for a company to take, because usually it's like, customer, no, we love our customers. We would never do that.
I guess some of these technology companies are in a bind because, you know, they're almost forced to do this by the government, and yet they want to remain loyal to their customers and not divulge information. And they're also prohibited from telling their customers explicitly what they're doing.
Yes.
So this is some way to be open and say, hey, this is what we've been doing on behalf of your government.
I wonder how many actual citizens, though, will choose one company over the other based purely on the amount of information that they provide.
On principle?
On principle, yeah.
I think of at least one person in this room that would choose something based on a principle like that, surely.
Might be me, yeah, but I don't know. It's just one of those things you think it's... I think it's more a European thing, isn't it?
Mm.
They're very big on privacy over there.
They are, and very, very strict. As in, it's not just they like it because it's cool, but they, you know, the laws in Europe are very super strict.
Mm, yep.
I think this is a good thing.
Now, also, sort of on the security topics, and we talked a few weeks back, I think it was, about Oleg Pliss.
Oleg Pliss has locked your phone.
Yes.
To unlock, you must send...
money.
All the bitcoins or something.
Well, it seems that two men... 17 and 23-year-olds were actually apprehended.
Mm. And they are suspected as being Oleg Pliss.
Mr. Pliss himself?
I'm sorry. I just love that Oleg Pliss. He sounds so nefarious. They're not saying for sure whether it is or isn't these fellows, but there were a lot of bits of evidence around them to suggest that that's what they were doing, and that they had used some, just as we reported, we suggested that maybe there was a bit of a phishing scam so that people were plugging in their password. And what they are accused of doing is using a phishing website to trick victims into giving up their passwords and their Apple IDs in exchange for lots of lovely free music.
Which is not the way that we thought they were doing it, which is, you know, matching up their Apple IDs to other
reused
security
passwords.
Breaches. Yeah.
And this makes more sense.
It is certainly simpler than decrypting a whole bunch of passwords, I suppose. Yeah.
Social engineering is so good.
From
a benevolent dictator's point of view, perhaps.
The prosecution rests on this recording.
Maybe I should have said social engineering is so effective.
It is. It is actually. It sounds. I mean, we've talked about that. We talked about all sorts of weird social engineering last time you were in a sort of different sort of motivations. But, you know, just some of the weird scammy things that people can say to suck you in because it sounds so good.
Yeah, but, like, I think anyone would just do anything for free music. But
yeah, who wouldn't?
Why would you bother, though? Just go on YouTube or one of the other streaming things.
Yes.
Yeah. Or listen to Joy.
Yeah, exactly. We've got all the free music you need.
Exactly.
Don't give out your Apple IDs and passwords.
Yeah, that's a really silly idea.
Oleg will... Oh, I can't say that word. He'll do you wrong.
He will.
Moving on.
What a cad.
A couple of green tech news items this week as well. What with the CSIRO. They, even though they don't, their budget may well be slashed very soon, they are still kicking goals. And one of the recent things that they've kicked is an Australian solar plant that generates supercritical steam. In fact, that in itself actually ensures that it rivals fossil fuel power generation.
What is supercritical steam?
It's steam that's hot enough to actually...
I guess
the way that a coal power plant works and other types of power plants is actually they heat up steam to push water through or push turbines around. Thank you. Turbines is the word I was looking for. And they're now doing it with solar power as well.
So it's a combination of temperature and pressure, I think, that they're achieving to be able to do this effectively.
Yes, there's a certain temperature that they can get to in order to actually get the most efficient use of the turbines.
Mm.
And this is, like, there have been solar plants that use a number of mirrors focusing on a tower, which is the technology that they're using, but they haven't been able to reach this criticality before.
Yes.
And so this is really exciting, and it's obviously on the step to be a commercial product, but it's nowhere near that as yet.
They actually
but it proves that it's worthwhile investigating it. That's the great things about these sorts of... Sorts of breakthroughs,
Now, 600 mirrors were apparently used to get it to this stage. That's, you can imagine that. Like, are they in a tower formation or are they in a sort of a...
They actually point to a tower.
Right.
And there's a very cool video, which, if I remember, I'll put up on our Facebook page, that shows all the mirrors suddenly aligning and you see the reflection hitting the tower and sort of... It's almost like a mirror ball at one stage until suddenly they all focus on the one spot on the tower.
Wow.
Wow. Mm. I was kind of imagining just a bunch of people with hand mirrors holding them up, like pointing them at the tower. But that's my low-tech grind.
I was thinking if my daughter was walking past, she'd never sort of get to the other end because she'd keep on looking at herself in the mirror.
Oh.
That's cheeky.
It's true.
Oh.
This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. Covering some of the latest in technology. If you want to contact us, maybe you're Michael's daughter and you want to contact us right now.
No. She doesn't listen anyway. It's fine.
You can do so by texting us 0427JOY949. What else have we got on the list of green news? And what was that one there? An entire island is now going to be powered by solar energy as well.
Dead set.
Yeah.
Amazing. So
there's apparently an island. It's part of the African.
It's off the west coast of Central Africa, and it's called Annobon.
Right.
And it's a fairly small island with a population of 5,000 people, and they currently rely on diesel generators for electricity, and they only get something like 5 hours a day.
Right, to power the population as it is.
That's right, yeah. And it's obviously quite expensive. So they're looking at using solar collectors to provide electricity. And to get around the what do we do at night time is that they're feeding power during the day back into batteries.
Right.
And then they'll draw on those batteries.
That's fantastic.
Mm. And experiments like this have been done before, but I think this is the first time that a whole community is relying on it for 100% of their energy needs.
Excellent. Yeah, because, I mean, with 5,000 people, it's, I guess it's a small population to work with, right? So,
yeah.
But being a small island, there's obviously logistical issues. They don't have coal readily available, for example. They don't have gas readily available, I presume. So, yeah.
And I guess from an expectation point of view, if you're used to 5 hours a day, if you can go up to 24, even if it's perhaps not 100% reliable, you're not going to complain because it's going to be a huge step up.
Yes.
So it'll be very interesting to see how reliable this is and how it progresses and whether it can be used in other communities. And I think it's going to be especially good in communities that are very, very remote. Because it's impossible then to bring in overland electricity because it just costs too much.
Yes.
And diesel is a resource that is disappearing.
It just goes to show, in fact, that, perhaps the smaller countries or the smaller parts of the world will actually push us forward with renewable energy development quicker than the big countries.
I do wonder, though, how much their electricity bill actually would be. Like, I assume it's kind of a poverty-stricken area.
Well,
because
like,
they only have
be.
5 hours of electricity.
Yeah, so. And one of the things is the cost that limits how much they run. And with this solar power, they're expecting the cost to be about 30% cheaper.
Right.
Now, I don't know whether 24 hours is 30% cheaper than 5 hours of diesel or it's overall 30% cheaper. But it's a positive move, and it's good for the world, for the environment.
Yeah, imagine that it would just boost their economy, so they wouldn't be spending all this money on diesel fuel to get electricity, so they could just, you know...
Yeah.
Expand and get iPhones and stuff.
Oh, no.
Be cool.
Ah, bless.
Well...
Or Android phones, or Windows phones, or any other... Maybe a Mozilla phone, too.
Hmm. Well, really? How much are Mozilla phones?
Well,
I'll tell you.
Oh.
Mozilla is what they're doing is they're expanding their smartphones into India and Southeast Asia, so Indonesia and all that sort of stuff. And they're selling them for the low, low price of $25.
Wow.
And is this a feature phone?
Maybe. I'm trying to find the story.
They're actually running that Firefox OS that we've talked about before.
Right. So it's a smartphone in its own right.
Yes.
That's a very low price.
That is a super, super cheap low price.
Which I guess they need to if they want to make inroads into those poorer markets.
Yeah, I think it's genius because if they're kind of doing what I call the Nintendo strategy, which Nintendo did with the Wii, which was releasing cheaper stuff.
Cheaper spec devices. For actual cheaper cost, which provides similar functionality, but maybe not. The most, not the same functionalities.
So what the Wii did for gaming was it brought in a whole bunch of casual users that would never have gamed before, and because the Wii was so cheap and had all these different features, and they figured, all right, well, let's get into it, and it creates a whole new consumer base. So what they're doing with India and Indonesia is they're expanding, using the Mozilla phone, they're allowing them all to actually have access to smartphones, which might not be as good as the ones that you get here, but... for that low cost, it's creating a whole new consumer base for smartphones and apps and everything.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's cool. Thrusting us into the future.
Oh, well, more death knell for BlackBerry then. Because I know, for instance, in Indonesia, BlackBerry is hugely popular. Because everybody likes BlackBerry Messenger.
Ah.
Is it because it actually has the buttons?
No, I think it's because...
I guess it's the ecosystem, right? Like, you sort of get locked in, all your friends are there.
It's the ecosystem, it's the cost, because it's cheaper than an SMS. So, yeah, very popular.
Win-win. You're listening to TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, covering some of the latest in tech, and we'll do some more of that in a few minutes.
TechnoGaze.
TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. This is the... I'm seeing smiles on both sides of me right now because it is a very exciting part of the show. We had E3, the Entertainment Electronics Expo. Is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the one.
So it's a game fest?
Yeah, it's essentially the video games, the video game industry version of Comic-Con. So all the companies, it's the big year event where everyone comes in and like, these are all our games, and they announce all the new games, and holy crap, I'm so excited.
So many huge trailers, great announcements, lots of playable demos.
Where was it held?
California somewhere.
California, so at the LA Convention Center.
That's it.
And it's been running for, I think, about 20 years now. So it's sort of spun away from things like CES, where they're kind of starting to spread out a little bit more and start dominating the show floor. So they've kind of moved into their own space. E3 is massive. Oh, my goodness. It's you know, like we were saying, it's the time of the year when all the best things get announced. The things that are coming out closer to Christmas, that everyone will be champing at the bit for.
because there's a lot of lead time with a lot of these announcements that get put up there, because you know they're like, hey, you know, here's a little teaser of this awesome game. By the way, you can't play it yet.
No, well, it's like anything. I mean, the amount of time it takes to develop a game is it's not dissimilar to the amount of time it takes to develop a movie from a script and get all the way to the cinemas. That takes a couple of years, 3 years sometimes, depending. With E3, so a lot of the splashiest announcements, I think, were the things that are just around the corner, because, of course, we do have our next-gen consoles have just come out. Sales have been a little bit slow for the time being because there haven't been so many games, but I think we can expect to see that change because there have been so many awesome games. Johnny, what are your favourites?
Oh, holy shibbity-doodah, I'm so excited. My favourite... Okay, there's this game that's coming out that was just announced this week. Shibbity-doodah. Write that one down.
Shibang-a-bang.
It's called Sunset Overdrive, and it is this totally off the hook action game where, like, the trailer, it's kind of set up where you think it's just another little shooter. It has like this army guy in a warehouse getting shot at.
How does the lead character look, Johnny?
Friggin' hot.
Johnny's new boyfriend.
I'm so in love with this new character. I don't even know what his name is, but he's got like this
It's John.
It is?
Oh. Well, I don't know. He's got John on his name tag.
Anyway, so basically the gist of the game is like it's kind of like an arcade action game where you run around and you shoot these mutants and you jump on things and make things explode, and this guy has like this haircut where it's like he started giving himself a mohawk but got tired halfway through.
I saw you...
Interrupted by mutants.
Yeah, when you were watching this. This was like the premise is that they have this energy drink that's taken over the world. Is that the one?
It's very tongue-in-cheek. The whole thing is very tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, it's built on reality, isn't it?
It's very self-referential and stuff. Like when he pops into the room and there's a soldier there, he's like, oh, cover mechanic, like making fun of shooter games and stuff.
Yes.
Nice.
So anyway, that game looks awesome.
It does.
It was developed by Insomniac Games, who also did Ratchet and Clank on PlayStation. So
that's another really sort of, you know, poking fun at itself sort of game.
Also... Oh, go ahead.
No. My quick question was going to be, when games come out, do they try to cover all platforms or do they just aim for a small number of platforms?
Oh, well, see, the thing is that most of the time they usually come across as multi-platform if you want to get the most profits. But sometimes developers, but companies like Sony and Microsoft or Nintendo will purchase development studios or create agreements and contracts where they release a certain game as an exclusive. So that exclusive, like all the Nintendo games are exclusive because it's their IP, like intellectual properties and stuff.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's kind of up to the deals that they have between the companies.
So for example, one of the big announcements that was pretty exciting this week is that Halo, which has been for the longest time a Xbox thing. Halo and Xbox are these, you know, interconnected entities in a lot of people's minds. The Master Chief Edition of Halo will be 4 editions of Halo, the old versions of Halo, remastered for next gen. So, of course, everyone's getting really excited. And
all 4 games in one disc or one download. And
yes,
they're all redone. Yeah, they're all remastered, new graphics. And the big kicker is that it actually releases an exclusive beta access to Halo 5 multiplayer, which will start in December. So that's kind of a way of being like, all right, you only have to pay $60 for 4 games, plus you get access to the early beta for Halo 5, which is huge.
That is going to get a lot of fanboys on.
Yeah. So it brings some new life into these old games.
Well, sort of. I mean, Halo is such a classic. Halo was one of the titles for the first Xbox about 4 million years ago. It's a wonderful story as well. It is such an iconic piece of game development, and a lot of people care a lot about it. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, wow, you know, the Xbox One. If I'm going to buy an Xbox One and I can play Halo again like I did when I was 12 and, you know, shooting dudes, how do you feel about that?
The genius thing about this is that because it's such an old game and we would have played it when we were like 12, 13, etc., those early
speak for yourself.
Yes, that's right. 12. I was 12.
Those early adopters would have had kids by now, and kids who have played the newer Halo games, so they can actually share the experience with their kids and be like, "All right, well, you know, you got to play Halo 3 or 4 or whatever, and let's go back and play the first one with Daddy."
It is amazing, epic. Of course, not every franchise is done that way, so they're not necessarily exclusive, but a lot of them are, and a lot of the really sort of cinematic ones. So, The Last of Us, for example, is a PlayStation exclusive, and that's being remastered of the PlayStation 4 and for no other platform. So you can sort of see that coming in. But there are some others. So Dragon Age 3 or Dragon Age Inquisition, as it's called, is going to be all over every platform. So you can expect that to be pretty interesting.
And talking about exclusives, I have to bring this one up before we run out of time because we need to talk about this. Nintendo's answer to first-person shooters or third-person shooters, Splatoon.
Splatoon.
It looks amazing. It's essentially, it kind of looks a bit like a, it's kind of like an online, well, actually, it's not confirmed if it's online or not, but it's multiplayer. You have two teams of four players, and basically what you are is you're like a squid.
You shoot your beautiful coloured ink as a squid.
Two teams with opposite coloured inks at spraying. The way you win is like you spray the arena with your ink, so your colour is the most dominant, and you're just shooting the other people, not killing people with like bullets, but ink.
No.
It's awesome.
Taking them over. It's fantastic.
Yeah. You just randomly spray?
No, you have a gun. It's like a water pistol type of thing.
Oh, okay, yep.
And it looks like Team Fortress 2, like there'll be different classes. Like there's a sniper in it. There's like a bazooka carrying dude. So what you can actually do is you spray the arena with your color ink and you can turn into a squid and swim in your color ink. So that makes you go faster and hides you from other people's bullets and stuff.
Oh, because you're swimming in it and therefore you can't be seen.
Yeah. Mm. But if the other people, like you can't swim in the other team's colored ink. So that's why you need to cover the arena with all your colors.
This trailer looks absolutely awesome.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Just an absolute riot. It was amazing. Little Big Planet. Little Big Planet there's a new version of that coming out. That's a PlayStation 4 exclusive.
As a non-gamer, I love Little Big Planet.
So if you play a game, I think that makes you a gamer.
Yeah, I agree.
Come on, especially if it's Little Big Planet.
I recently got rid of the console that I could play it on, but it is one of the most amazing games, you know, and the best feature I've seen in it is the fact that you can actually make your own levels on Little Big Planet. The whole premise is you get a, and I don't know what the new version has in it, but I'll describe what I'm used to, which is the ability to put platforms down, and you might have a glass platform or a carpet platform, whatever, and the character, your character actually reacts to that surface as if it's that surface, so you can like slide along or whatever, right?
Yeah, so the big thing with Little Big Planet is all about creating your own levels and sharing them with everybody. And the great thing about Little Big Planet 3, which is coming out exclusively for PlayStation 4, is that it will allow you to download all the content from all the previous Little Big Planet games. So if you have a friend or a family member or whoever who created levels for you in Little Big Planet 1 or Little Big Planet 2, you can download that and have it on Big Planet 3 as well. So it essentially, like,
backwards compatibility.
Yeah, it's huge because the amount of content that users have created, this game could essentially last forever. Like, it's massive. Speaking of lasting forever, this game is going to blow everybody's minds. Okay, No Man's Sky.
Yes.
This is phenomenal. So it's a massive universe. It's generated procedurally, like it's completely random.
Yep.
But it's you know, it's an MMO, I guess, of sorts.
Yeah.
But not, you know, in the whole I'm going questing with my orc friends, but more like I'm going exploring.
Yeah, the way they described
taking
it was
over planets.
It's like an inclusive MMO where they tried to keep the players as far away from each other as possible. So the idea is it's a whole randomly generated universe and you can discover your own planet, and from then on if anybody else visits your planet it'll always have your name there saying so-and-so planet discovered by Johnny or whatever, and you can document all these randomly generated species. So essentially it's like a sandbox game, kind of like an adult version of Minecraft. And
you're an explorer.
Yeah, and you can just
in space,
all you have to do is jump in your little spacecraft and fly to a whole new planet, and there's like this new ecosystem you can explore and do whatever you want. Like, it's not just exploring, but you get to, you know, kill things as well if you want to.
that's the thing, though. If you've taken over a planet and you're thinking, yeah, I'm going to shoot all these cool little pink elephant-looking things.
Yeah.
And you know, you accidentally kill them all. That's it. They're done. There's that's done.
Extinct. No other player will ever be able to see that same species. It's like every ramification, everything
oh,
you do.
Oh, this is so wrong.
Nice one, jerk.
I know, but like the idea is...
Michael's just gotten like... He's playing it right now.
It'll keep... It's about sharing the sandbox with other people. So if you if you do something, there's always ramifications for your actions.
It'll be interesting to see what happens socially with that. You know, people forming alliances or going and visiting each other's worlds and stuff. It'll be pretty amazing.
I don't share my sandbox with anyone.
It's because you peed in it.
Oh, lovely. This is Techno Gaze here. We're almost out of time. It's 5 minutes to one here.
Goodness.
Enjoy 94.9. We'll be back to wrap up the show in just a few moments.
Techno Gaze
here. You are, we're towards the end of the show, actually.
I know.
Lovely time once has been had once again.
That's right.
Show, of course.
That's right.
What should we finish up with? There's
get
a new
this.
Type of selfie.
Yeah.
What's it called?
So instead of having the camera that you hold out with your arm and, you know, like you sort of squish your heads together and like, yeah, like that, it's a droney. You get your favourite little drone, you stick your camera on that and you get the drone to take a photo of
you. Get the drone to shoot you.
in the camera way. You know, just like a normal human used to when, you know, you were out somewhere and you'd ask a real live person to hold your camera and take a photo for you. Why talk to one of those messy human beings and you can just get your robot friend?
Well, because they could run away with your camera or something like that.
That is true. And you know what else a drone can do, which a person can't, is fly into the air and take a cool overhead shot.
Oh,
it's a sneaky thing. Lots of look for them, you know, for those who have the drones.
Some of the examples I saw, mountains and stuff.
Yeah, like some of them are posting vines, so, you know, those little motion portraits, I suppose.
I can see all this competition to have the most, you know, elaborate droney out there.
That's right.
That's all we have time for today. If you missed any part of the show or perhaps you'd like to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by browsing to joy.org.au/technogaze. Coming up next, another superb lineup for Cravings with Pete Dillon, not least of which, of course, is Marco Pierre White.
Oh, my goodness.
OMGs, so do stay tuned for that. Penny with Joy News is coming up next. Thank you, Johnny, for coming in today.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you, Raina.
I'm so pleased to be here.
And thank you, Michael, for driving the bus.
I hope you had a smooth flight.
Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll catch you next week.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.